listening to the Nerds Assemble podcast.
To episode 276 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
And I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
It's 2021 somehow, but it still feels like 2020. We attempted to record an episode the previous night of what we're recording now, but we were beset by technical difficulties that have led to us completely changing the recording setup, basically.
Yeah, Gremlins, not just a Christmas film.
No.
Also, woes.
Many woes. Whilst we were trying to fix the hardware and driver-based issues involved, the internet at ours decided to go down.
That is true. Well, it went down earlier as well, so fingers crossed this episode will actually get made.
Because we're doing a new setup and that, like, we're hoping that this is actually going to end up being recorded because it's like not saving on the same setup that we had before. We have no hardware basically involved now other than a mic and a laptop, whereas previously we used a mix minus setup.
Well, I mean, we've got like wires and stuff, but it's not, you know.
It's not like what we had before where it was a wire jungle.
Yeah, previously it was a wire jungle.
Yeah. The joys of the mix minus setup that you... that you had to collapse every time.
No, sorry, who has to collapse?
Paul has to collapse. Or won't be anymore, hopefully, because...
So writing down Paul collapses. Right.
If you would like to know what technical issue we think may have eventually been involved, we suspect a Windows 10 update finally messed with the drivers that our M-Audio box used to connect the mix minus setup to the PC and everything else.
Because Windows Update does that.
Yeah.
I actually think it wasn't an upset Daedra.
It had form for previous versions of the operating system, dating all the way back to those sunny days of XP. Ooh. It was just a matter of time, my deep Googling found. Matter of time. The reason we have suspect the M-Audio box is because when we connected it up to my PC, which isn't quite up to dealing with a whole podcast episode, it all worked fine, but my PC's a Surface, so it gets different Windows updates to Paul's laptop.
I mean, to be fair, I reckon it probably could.
I wouldn't trust it.
But yeah. So I remember in the early days of us doing D&D online, I think your laptop was struggling with the amount of connections going to it, with the amount of people.
Well, it doesn't like Skype much.
To be fair, we don't like Skype much.
This is true. Anyway, enough about us having to deal with technical crap that rained down on us last night. We have been up to stuff since our wrap-up episode. New things, new experiences, new lockdowns. So, Paul, dear, what have you been up to?
What have I been up to? Let's see, there was... what was that?
Well, that Netflix series you watched.
Yeah, that Netflix series.
I'm just thinking like of all the Netflix...
We've been watching quite a lot of Netflix recently.
Is it on my list? I think it's on my list. It's the one with the teen series.
The teens.
They were teenagers in high school. Like,
I'm gonna watch it again.
I feel like it'd be further back that way.
But it wasn't.
Okay.
Still need to finish watching the rest of iZombie. I think I've got a season to go. Oh, blimey, there's a lot of stuff there.
We've watched, of course there is.
And it's listing like every single thing that we've ever.
But they still got.
Never have I ever.
Never have I ever. There we go.
Yeah. Which is about a an Indian girl.
Indian American.
And basically trying to improve her social standing at high school.
Yeah.
With her two besties. One of which is kind of into drama. And another which is into tech.
Yeah, robotics. Robotics, specifically.
And, you know, there's the usual kind of, popular sporty boy. He seems like...
Unaware of the existence of this protagonist.
And somehow manages to fall in love or something. So it's fairly...
Teen rom-com run-of-the-mill, it seems at first.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we've seen a couple of different films like it, but this is actually a TV series, which is kind of interesting playing it out for, you know...
Was it 12 episodes or 10?
I think it was 10.
10.
I have the feeling it was 10.
10 makes sense for Netflix, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know what else we've been watching on Netflix? We've finished watching Star Trek Discovery.
Yes.
So, series three, definitely different and bloody marvellous.
I generally liked it, but I had issues with the source of the burn.
In what respect?
That it was repetitive of something else that happened at one point.
Yeah, and it just seemed a bit, all right. You know, there wasn't any, like, you know, a big reason for it.
Well, there wasn't, like, a, you know, super doomsday weapon type thing.
Well, I wasn't even thinking along that line.
I felt that the cause of the burn was actually incredibly Star Trek. Personally, you know, the whole shifting between, like, big cosmic science problems... versus very kind of emotional human or human-like kind of... kind of issues.
Yeah, I'm going to... What I'm going to do is I'll be rewatching the season because I've done that with each season so far. You know, I'll watch them weekly. And then once they're finished, I'll, you know, binge the season.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And, yeah, and yeah, I'm getting visited by a cat and it's not my cat. This is the second time he's been in, this is the neighbor's cat that keeps coming in.
Is this the neighbor's cat that destroyed part of your living room the one time?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes, it is.
Is he gonna topple over our podcast?
No, please don't. Yeah, please stop the kitty sabotage.
It's like I can put up with him toppling but not breaking a 42-inch 1080p TV, but a 4K 40-inch TV is gloves if he does that.
His gloves.
He's warm gloves if he does that.
I was gonna say before there was a kitty that I enjoyed Star Trek Discovery Season 3 on the whole more than I did the last few episodes of Picard. The last few episodes of Picard really annoyed me.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. There was certain things that I kind of disliked about Discovery. And one of them was the fact that... what kind of size is Discovery? Because the turbo lift.
Oh god! Everyone.
I mean, that was kind of something that annoyed me about like the earlier seasons as well, and I've never noticed it until kind of rewatching it. Basically, the sequences with the turbo lifts, and it's like, you know, just kind of seemingly going everywhere in like a hollow type shell.
Yeah, that is something that they nicked from JJ Trek.
Hmm.
And I wish it would piss off.
I mean, that kind of made it feel almost more like a Babylon 5-esque type thing.
I feel like having a massive open space like that in a spaceship is asking yourself for some real structural issues if it becomes compromised in some way.
It's a huge idiotic waste of space.
I mean,
when everything should, if it's the future, where they are now in season 3, I can put up with the idea that maybe, they've got everything, everything is so high tech that you can just have the corridors and the rooms that you need, and they are added or taken away as required in a big frame of a ship.
Yeah, but
especially in the, like early seasons of Discovery, when it's, just before, Spock and Kirk.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's not going to be...
I could understand it if it was something to do with how the spore drive actually works. If that, for some reason they needed like that extra space to make something work in that respect, I could kind of understand that then. But I think kind of judging from for example, the battle between Control and the Enterprise and Discovery.
Yeah.
And Discovery was quite large, but it wasn't like it's so large that you can tell that there's like a hollow bit in the middle that'll take fucking, 3 minutes or more to kind of traverse in the turbo lift.
Yeah, it's just to me, watching every season, everything of Star Trek multiple times over, which I have done because I am a massive nerd.
Also, was it a pocket dimension?
You would think it would have to be, wouldn't it? Wouldn't you?
Hmm.
But Jeffrey's tubes.
Hmm.
In the original Star Trek, and in Next Gen, and DS9, and Voyager, because the whole thing is, if everything is supposed to be so tightly compacted that they have to have, if you're going to have a way to get from one place to another, it's in a small tube that you have to crawl through. And if you notice, in Discovery, they do still have that, because you see a few characters having to use them.
Yeah.
Burnham is stuck in one at one point. But it's just, if you've got those Jeffrey's tubes, then why do you have Jeffrey's hiking? Jeffrey's ship climbing from the inside. It's just, it doesn't really make any sense to me. It might look nice. It might look all futuristic-y, but it's just a bit.
Thing that the series could have done with, though, is more Jet Reno.
Yes,
I love her interactions with Paul Stamets.
I am in favor of the Jet Reno show. Just Star Trek Jet Reno, where she just goes around being pissed off at everything. Yes.
But I mean, now we're going to be waiting for Picard season 2. Lower Decks is just about to launch in the UK. I think that's this Friday, actually.
Yeah, I haven't seen that yet because I haven't seen it with it not being available in the UK.
But I mean, like, at the
moment. Instead of watching it twice.
Yeah. And obviously we're going to have Strange New Worlds coming out at some point.
Looking forward to it.
Star Trek Prodigy meant to be coming out at some point. And we've also got the Section 31 series should be coming out at some point. And it just feels like after Lower Decks, there's not going to be anything for a while. And that kind of depresses me slightly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it almost felt a bit spoiled like last year. With Picard at the earlier, kind of part of that. And then, like, Discovery at the very end. And if you're friends with Dave Internet, then Lower Decks kind of in the middle there.
Because why wouldn't you be? It's Star Trek.
Yeah.
I think it's taken TV production a little bit of time to accept that. This isn't something that they're just going to have to, buckle down and withstand if they want to continue.
Yeah.
They're going to have to change with it.
Oh, yeah, because, I mean, say, for example, like Walking Dead is meant to be getting, like, another couple of extra episodes to, from the last season, because the next season is going to be the
final
one or something. So they're having to kind of do that while you know, this is all going on. And The Witcher is also kind of having like, you know, that's kind of progressing as this is kind of going on. And can I just say once again
that, you know, Witcher has been filming in my part of the country.
I believe I saw something today suggesting that they've either started filming again this week or it's happening next week because Cavill's healed up after his misadventures. Lost adventure.
Probably building a PC.
I mean, let's face it. I mean, was it coincidence that it seemed to happen around the time that Cyberpunk 2077? I don't know. I'm just saying, Mr. Cavill. We saw that video of that glorious PC you put together, and then you set the temperature gauge or some gauge that had a visual display of what the hell the PC was up to in terms of like temperature and a couple of other things. He put it upside down, I think, or backwards, and you had to like take it apart, rejig it around, and then close his new PC that he built, you know, back up again. It's hilarious.
But also another thing that I've been doing recently, this is more of a like very recently, like this past week, which is watching Nurse Jackie from the beginning again.
Because we have watched probably the first two or three seasons
three, possibly just about to go into fourth or something like that.
But there are seven seasons.
That was like several years ago now. So, you know, I found that I remembered more about the plots and stuff than Emily, but it's still fairly
new.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've heard that a lot.
Don't forget there was the Doctor Who New Year's special. That was so memorable. I'm doing the look with my face at the moment at the term memorable.
Yeah, because I remember Captain Jack and
Captain Jack I really remember because that was fun having Captain Jack back.
Now the Doctor's going off with Yaz, and Ryan and Graham kind of staying on Earth, which I kind of... Yeah, if she was going to have to go off with one of them, I think Yaz would probably be the one more suitable.
Yaz was the one doing the whole crazy connections, like papering a wall level of investigations when they were wondering what the hell was going on. So she had that whole obsessive thing going for her.
But I do wonder what how John Bishop is going to be plugged in there somehow.
I've decided that I'm certainly sick of seeing the Daleks or Cybermen in specials or anything to do with Doctor Who.
I quite enjoyed that the Daleks being all about racial and species genetic purity. Thought it'll be fine if we just turn up with a tiny bit of human DNA in us. And it's just, shocker.
Yeah. To be fair, last season I did actually quite like the lone Cyberman type thing, because that seemed to kind of expand the stuff a bit more, and was kind of at least a little bit an interesting spin on an old villain. But when it comes to like Daleks, there's kind of very little that can be kind of pushed any further, really, without it just basically being another Dalek storyline.
I'm sure you could come up with something, but it would be difficult within the constraints of Doctor Who unless you were given, full, freedom.
Yeah.
Hey, remember Daleks in Manhattan and the way they tried to expand on the Daleks? Sorry.
I do wonder whether any of the like, say for example, Weeping Angels or anything will come back, or whether Chibnall's just like, nope, Moffat stuff is gone now. I'm doing my own stuff, but with classic stuff.
You see, I didn't, you know, I got quite bored of the Weeping Angels with Moffat's run. I liked them, but it was like you're straining it now. And I thought the Ood looked cool, but they made no sense. With Let's Carry Our Brain in a Jar, how could that go wrong?
Hmm.
But I liked them being there as just little nods in the cells, at the New Year special.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh yeah, please don't make the story about them. Thanks. And oh, you're doing the Daleks. Oh, right.
But no, occasionally I'll kind of watch like one of the What Culture on YouTube, and they've got their own kind of Star Trek culture or Who culture and whatnot, and it's like the guys that do the Who culture stuff, and it's just so incredibly down at the moment. Like every chance they get, they slag it off, and it's just like. I mean, I get that you're frustrated with certain things in, like, with the way that Who's going, but by the same token, it kind of feels somehow wrong to try and kind of produce content like that and then just be basically being like, yeah, but the modern stuff's shit. It's a bit like anybody that tries to do kind of Star Trek content and then turn around saying,
Jesus Christ.
Discovery shit, Picard shit, Lodex shit. And it's just like, really? Oh, yes, and Emily's just reminded me of another thing. I'll quickly do this one, which is Schitt's Creek. Finally getting around to watching that on Netflix as well.
And we're on season two now.
Season two or three?
I thought it was season two. Are we on three?
No, I think we're on season three.
Oh, we've made it all the way to three.
Yes.
Okay.
Obviously, it's one of those shows where the characters start off as very unlikable. But if you stick with it, you can actually kind of get a nice sense of growth out of them.
I feel like the characters in Schitt's Creek are more likable than the characters in Arrested Development. I think Arrested Development, that the characters in that very much stick to the show's title. Their development is eternally arrested.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Yeah.
I've made a huge... tiny mistake.
I mean, I did like the Arrested Development, at least seasons 1 to 3. I think after that it kind of got a bit, sure.
I keep meaning to go back and watch the new season on Netflix, but the one that's edited together in the way that it's more like the original series. Because we watched it after, being huge fans of Arrested Development, and it just didn't feel right.
It didn't feel like the same show, really, did it?
No. Yeah. So I'm hoping with it being re-edited, as a different edition, maybe if I go back to it, I won't dislike it as much. Not that I, hated the new season. I just didn't think it was anywhere near.
But is there anything in particular you're liking about Schitt's Creek? Because that's what we started talking about.
Yeah, I mean, I know it's kind of almost like a comfort show to watch. It feels like, because the town is the same, the characters are pretty much the same, or kind of at least mostly the same throughout. And it's kind of nice to just kind of stick on and zone out to. That's not to say that there isn't character development, because as I've previously said, there is quite significant stuff. But it's kind of nice to watch. Say, for example, was it Davey and Stevie's kind of friendship kind of growing?
Is that?
If you want me to move on, what
is there? Have you got anything else, or am I gonna?
No, you go for it.
Okay, Retroid.
Yeah.
What's a bit up to? Wrestling neighbors' cats. Aside from that,
By wrestling, you mean cuddling and stroking? And oh no, you don't like belly rub, do you? Okay. Sorry. I'm sorry, sir.
I mean, now I'm just imagining, you know, that definition of wrestling being, you know, the only definition of wrestling. In which case, like
WWE's got, yeah, it would be a whole lot different. They would have less of a legal case against them for people having like massive injuries that they have no insurance or real cover for because they're not treated like employees in the States.
I mean, can you just imagine? It's like, oh, and it's John Cena. Where's he gone? Here, John.
So, and John can't come to the wrestling ring right now because he sat down in the audience and the cat instantly jumped on his knee and he's so warm and soft. yes. Right. What have I been up to? Well, had a little bit of a telly upgrade.
Yes.
Went from after my 42-inch 1080p TV sort of just stopped.
What do you mean by just stopped?
Well, it about 2 or 3 months ago, it just stopped. It had just decided, it's like, no, I'm not switching on today. So it got shuffled off, and I couldn't find anything, you know, immediately wrong with it. And with everything being all, you know, the world.
Yeah.
I didn't have replacement capacitors to try in it, so it just kind of been put away. And then as part of like a Christmas thing, we got hold of a 40-inch 4K Fire TV, which you know, Amazon can go to hell, but if they're wanting to, you know, part finance my new TV, I'll let them. But, you know, that's been quite nice, and it's got all kinds of ridiculous things. Like, first, when I switched it on, 2021, you're living in the future. The first time you switch on your new TV, it's got a firmware update.
As long as it's got the memory necessary to complete the firmware,
yes,
update.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's just, you know, sometimes the future is great, and other times it just seems silly. I've got, you know, like, you know, if I switch the TV off, I have to wait for it to boot. It's just, I'm waiting for my television to boot. This is silly.
How long is that wait?
Maybe up to about a minute.
Oh, really?
Wow. Mm. That's about as long as a Fire Stick would be. From
what I can tell with this thing, it is basically a Fire Stick, but it runs your TV. Like, I can press the microphone button on the remote, and I can say, watch BBC News.
Hmm.
And it will switch from whatever I'm doing to, you know, BBC News and Freeview. And as an example of, you know, I'm doing this because I can do these things on my TV. I installed Pac-Man 256 and a demo of Doom. I couldn't actually control the demo of Doom because it wants a Bluetooth controller paired with it, but I can play Pac-Man 256 on, you know, well, as in like, was it Highway? Do you know the game I mean? Where it's just like it's a continuous game where you just travel off the map, except this one is Pac-Man themed.
Oh, right. Okay.
It started off as a different game, and hang on, I am just Googling. I installed, you know, those, and nothing that actually required payment, because that can go to hell.
Yeah.
But, you know, I can do those things, and I can ask the TV about, you know, what the weather's going to be tomorrow, and it will, you know, do all that. But, of course, the reasons I got it was that it's a larger TV, it's 4K, and it has HDR support. And seeing as we got an Xbox Series X on launch, having something that could actually display those things was quite nice. And I think it was about 250 quid. which to my mind is damn good for a, you know, a 4K TV that isn't terrible.
Fair, yeah.
But my PC did not like it. And I do not know why. I would boot it up, and I would get the BIOS screen. I would get the military grade hardware, stupid bollocks, you know, from the, you know, the BIOS, you know, manufacturer. And I would get the, you know, the four blue panels of, you know, Windows 10 booting. And then that would be it. My TV would just insist that there was no signal. So for some reason, it just did not like the signal that was coming from the PC or the cable or something. But yeah, I had to start using it.
Can we just talk a minute? How do you end up with a military grade warning in the BIOS?
But it's some marketing bollocks, because it's like, oh yeah, this, you know, this motherboard is military grade hardware. And it's a bollocks, is it?
Okay.
But yeah, I'll have to see if I can find a picture of the you know, the BIOS screen. But yeah, it's one of those smart ass BIOS ones as well, where it can take a keyboard and mouse control, and you've got sliders for CPU speed and all, you know, all that kind of thing. But yeah, you know, so I had to start using the Steam Link, which I'm using right now to do the podcast with, because I, you know, taken it into a, you know, different room. So I'm not annoying my other half. And that was fine for desktop stuff, but I tried playing one or two games from my Steam library on my otherwise very capable PC, thanks very much. And I'd get about 15 minutes into a game, and then I would just get a hard lock, and I'd have to restart the PC. Now, Lou, a while back, had said that I would probably have to upgrade my power supply, because it was getting on a bit, and it was probably not up to the task of running in a quad-core i5 with a lovely graphics card and three hard drives.
Well, and yeah,
he was like, "Well, it seems to be working for now, so yeah." But yeah, it decided that running anything more demanding than a desktop was going to be an issue. So it's like, "Well, I'm not having a PC of that spec, and not being able to play games on it." So, Lou tracked down a good spec power supply, that she's seen before on there, and he said, well, you know, this will do the job. So that's what we did today, installed a new power supply, and I've been playing stuff like BioShock and Arkham Knight in 4K because I can.
Fair.
Hey?
So BioShock and Arkham Knight,
yes. Just as a, because I've been playing Arkham Knight because it was on Game Pass on Xbox and Xbox One and Series X, and Luke's been using the Series X to play Assassin's Creed Valhalla. So I've been relegated to my own Xbox One, and this is 30 frames a second, and I can tell that it's clearly below 1080p, let alone anything else, and it didn't get any upgrades for Xbox One X or Series X. And I was thinking, I wonder where I left it on PC, because I know I completed the main story, but how much else did I do? And it turned out that I had done not much past that. I hadn't completed most of the bits around the city. There was DLC I hadn't played, because that was it. Another thing as well, because I was thinking of buying the Arkham Collection on Xbox One.
Okay.
Because I'd been enjoying it, so much going back to Arkham Knight. And I thought, well, is any of the PC worth, is any of the DLC that I've got on the PC worth, playing? That I will go back to it. And it's like, oh yeah, my PC is falling over repeatedly. This is bad. But yeah, having a desktop that uses HDR is a bit ridiculous in my book, but I'm not going to complain.
Wait, HDI?
HDR, high dynamic range.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry, I thought you said I rather not.
No. But yeah, that's quite nice. Arkham Knight was my test because that's what kept falling over every 15 minutes of gameplay. And played about an hour of it, and that was fine. And then I just decided, ooh, I got reminded of Bioshock again a few days ago. So I wonder what this looks like in 4K. And the answer is quite nice, as I tweeted out some, you know, screen grabs I'd taken, you know, full 4K ones.
Nice.
I've been slightly upgrading my PC to deal with my much upgraded TV. And otherwise, I've just been tinkering about, but not with anything, you know, anything big, anything, you know, like big project wise,
yeah,
tech wise. I've mostly just been relaxing and, you know, playing stuff on Game Pass and just frowning at my PC falling over and threatening it with it being kicked up the garden.
I mean, I have to admit that's the one thing about kind of PCs is that because they're so upgradable, you kind of be upgrading it forever. Like, you know, you're kind of going to get a new graphics card and then you're going to be like, oh, well, you know, you can't really take advantage of, you know, this and that because it doesn't have enough RAM. So you increase the RAM and it's like, oh, why, you know, you're not going to be able to take advantage of this other thing like CPU. So you upgrade that and then, yeah, it's just kind of a constant, like, you know, I want to upgrade this next door.
So you're just trying to put me off building a PC?
No, I'm just saying that, you know, that's kind of, you know.
Well, it's like, with, you know, with my current setup, you know, the CPU is grunty enough. Mm-hmm. We recently, because my graphics card just died on me about a year ago, so we upgraded to, you know, a closely related one, which, you know, ended up being cheaper and more powerful, but it burnt through less, you know, power consumption. So, you know, that worked out. But then when it came to the new consoles coming out and we were looking at the graphics cards that I would, you know, well, we were both looking at upgrading our PCs. And that's why we ended up with a Series X, because, you know, that's geared towards 4K and it has all the ray tracing hardware. And we would probably have to upgrade everything in our PCs to get close to that. And because everyone was looking at the new consoles and thinking, ooh, it might be an idea to upgrade our new PCs with new hardware. And the world was ending around us. So, you know, prices had gone up and it was just, yeah, it's going to be more cost effective to get a next gen console and wait for the prices to come down, because it will have to be new motherboard, new CPU, a new motherboard so it could handle the faster graphics card speeds. You know, so, you know, like PCIe, you know, multipliers.
Wow.
So, yeah, it would have to be just, you know, upgrading a hell of a lot, and it would cost a lot more than just a console. So it was like, yeah, especially because we jumped on late. You know, I've been through all this with, you know, I've explained it when, you know, we got the Series X, and it was just, it made more sense, but our PCs are both very, very, very capable. And it's just more or less anything we throw at it. They can't do ray tracing because the cards don't support it.
Yeah.
It's, you know, like a generation or two behind. But we can do at least 2K gaming with, you know, most of the bells and whistles on. So, you know, got no issue there. But yeah. Otherwise, let's see. TV things we've been watching.
Yeah.
Been watching, you know, Discovery, as you know, covered with Paul there. Also, we're midway through The Queen's Gambit, because, you know, we got tempted by you know, all the good reviews for that.
Everyone was going crazy about it the other month.
Apparently, yes.
There have been several things recently that people have gone, you know, absolutely crazy over, and we've just been sat at home being like, you do realise that the crazier you get over it, the more likely we're not to watch it.
Yeah.
But I am watching. Well, I'll talk about one thing I am watching that people go crazy for.
But yeah, Queen's Gambit, which is good. We've also been watching Diablera. I apologize to any Mexican or Hispanic listeners we've got, because this is a Mexican series, which is not a nice change, on Netflix. And the general plot is there's a child who is kidnapped by a demon, and there are a group who are looking for this child, because one is the priest who is the child's father. There's a Diablera who's like a demon hunter using various maybe traditional, but if you think of it as like a Mexican supernatural,
okay. But does it seem better?
Yeah.
Well, it seems like somebody's bitter.
I don't know what you talked about.
It's working out well. You've got the priest, you've got the Diablera, you've got the Diablera's sister, who's a nurse, who discovered like a mark, a burn mark on it, the body of the child's mother, and that's how they got involved. And you've got another character who is possessed. She's not, I don't think she's exercised the demon, but she's just sort of, by sheer strength of will, controls it. And can bring it out when, she needs to.
Hmm.
It's like she's known as, one of the best hosts for a demon, because she can, withstand it and then get rid of it if need be. And you've got dealings with the Mexican underworld. You've got like demon fights that the Diablera's, I think, brother runs, because he's like they don't get on. So one's trying to get rid of demons, and the other one buys exercised demons that are contained in in bottles, and then gives them to people who are willing to risk their their bodies to fight in an arena.
Okay.
That happens in one episode. So it's kind of, yeah, and what one of the most refreshing things about it is?
What's that?
It's set in Mexico, and it doesn't have a stupid colour filter on it.
That is good.
It's just
because it's not actually made in the US, though.
Yeah, it's just, if this is the standard of some of the the series that they do in Mexico, which are, why aren't we seeing more? Because it's kind of nice. Now, did I mention, I think the last podcast I mentioned that we'd watched a Korean series called Sweet Home?
Yes.
Yes. Finished watching that. It is quite good and quite Korean. And it, yeah.
What do you mean by that?
Well, instead of saying, it's quite, Asian, which is like, what the hell does that mean? It's distinct, because we watched did I mention this on the last podcast that we did? Alice in Borderland.
That sounds familiar, but I'm not entirely sure whether it's from you.
Yeah, because it recently popped up on Netflix. So that's a Japanese series where a group of teenagers, or young men, wastrels, for want of a better term, they're just sort of like knocking about in Tokyo, and then they find that themselves in a Tokyo that doesn't seem to have anyone in it. And everything is switched off. There's no power anywhere. There's nothing on the radio, and then they notice that there's, you know, one building lit up, and when they enter the building, they find out that they've by entering the building, they have entered into a game. It's kind of different versions of, you know, if you think Battle Royale, except a lot of the permutations you could do on that. And it's quite a good. It's based on a there's an anime of it, which we have also watched via our mutual friend Dave Internet, and that's some of the episodes on it are quite close. But yeah,
close in the sense of the politics of today.
Well, no, but they there's one episode which is set in a botanic garden, which is almost shot for shot with the, you know, the TV series, but other things are, you know, quite different. But yeah, there are other survivors, and they don't know who's running the games. But every time you complete a game, you get a card. So you're, you know, you walk in, you pick up a mobile phone that says, you know, one per person. It will scan the person's face in, and it will say, this game is Three of Hearts. And Hearts is the type of game where, you know, Hearts is betrayal. And three is how, you know, the rating of how difficult it is. And within other survivors who manage to survive these games, there's an idea, you're never told whether it's, you know, a myth or not, that if you manage to collect every single card in a deck, you will find your way home.
Okay.
It's quite good. And yeah, there are a few points where it diverges from what you might expect. It's quite a well thought out series, and I'm looking forward to another season of it, because it's one of the it's like Diablero. We watched the trailer for it and it looked a bit piss poor. And I wasn't as struck by the trailer for Alice in Borderland. But, you know, watched it because it's like, you know, the trailer for Alice in Borderland just makes it look like, oh, these are gamers and they suddenly find themselves in the game. Which instantly turns me off because it's like, oh, bollocks to that. But it's not like that. But it's never, you know, explained what is going on, because of course no one else has any idea what's going on, so you have all these ideas of what is going on. And then half the time it just seems to be disproved anyway. But yeah, I would recommend Alice in Borderland. Diablero, we're midway through the first season and it's working out quite well, thank you very much. There is a second series and apparently it has been recommissioned for a third.
Ah, cool.
Yeah. So, yeah, I recommend both, actually. And, you know, Queen's Gambit is good. And from what I remember of chess, because, you know, I played it a bit, but never seriously. I've never been a huge, you know, chess fan. But, yeah, it's kind of refreshing that as you watch, you know, parts on the board, they do make sense. And it's not like a massive chess nerd series. It's a drama around Beth Harmon, who doesn't have a good time of it, right? You know, frankly.
Fair enough.
I'm trying to think if there's anything else we've watched, and I really don't think so. We're still waiting for The Expanse to finish, so we can binge it.
Fair.
But I think that's around about mid-February when it finishes, so it's, you know, it's kind of
still a bit of time then.
Yeah, because I just want to be able to, you know, sit down and watch it without having to, you know, bloody wait. I've been spoiled. Oh, and of course, Mandalorian. And it is good.
Emily?
The one thing I haven't been doing is watching Mandalorian.
Why is that, Emily?
Because I don't want to give Disney any fucking money. And I don't trust a lot of other methods of watching things.
What, you mean you're not a fan of Dave Internet?
Not always, no. It can get complicated.
It can at times, yes. Dave Internet can be moody.
Yeah, but what I have done, well, there's been a lot. So I had a glorious time off for Christmas. I managed to finish playing The Last of Us Part 2 and found myself yet again annoyed by the ending of a game from Naughty Dog.
So, in your opinion, what made it bad?
It's not bad. Like, the game's very moving and stuff, and I was reasonably fine with narrative decisions that happened early on in the game, and which give a raison d'etre to Ellie for the game. But it felt like it went on too long. There was like a really good natural stopping point, and then they carried the game past that. It was like the equivalent of, like, I don't know, like a film deciding that it wanted to go from being a 3-act film to a 5-act film, but it didn't quite have enough juice for those last two acts.
And it's just, why are we still going?
Yeah. And it was just kind of like, well, because where the first game was like a tale of hope that's essentially shattered, the second game is a tale of revenge. And there are lessons about revenge in the sense that it never pays. Basically, like, revenge is hollow. There is no point. It's pretty much the main message of the game. But as a player, you probably reach that conclusion far earlier than Ellie.
Mm.
And so you're dragged out into this extra act, two acts, where you're like, is it over yet?
Did it kind of pull you out of the game a little bit?
The extension, yes. And also, like, the degree of violence involved in the revenge. And, like, we're talking Kill Bill levels, but with less style. It was kind of like, okay, I didn't realise she had this in her. Huh? Okay. I mean, it's well made and stuff. It's really pretty in places, and they have a really good photo mode included in the game. I was able to, like, get some really good in-game shots thanks to it. But yeah, it was just like, and you end up actually, because of how Ellie does things, you perhaps end up siding with characters you don't expect to end up siding with.
Okay.
It kind of reminded me of the bit that I stopped playing Grand Theft Auto 5. Which is basically the bit where you are forced by the game to torture somebody.
I can't remember if they ever made that skippable in
that
updates.
They did apparently make that skippable in updates, but...
when you were originally playing it, but yeah.
Yeah, and it's just like, this has jumped from, you know, kind of being, you know, kind of fun narrative thing to me literally being asked to torture somebody who, yes, they're a digital fictional character... But by the same token, you're asking me to torture somebody. And it's like, no, I don't want to do this. I don't want to play this game anymore.
I know exactly which bit you're talking about as well.
Yeah. And yeah, there was kind of like a bit of that with, a lot of that with two once you get past a certain point, basically. So I finished Last of Us Part 2. And then somehow, like the classic thing that happens when I decided to dedicate myself to gaming around Christmas, because this has happened in years past.
Where a game has left a bad taste in your mouth.
And then I've gone and played something else and be like, oh, this is delightful. The last such instance of note was Fallout New Vegas versus Deadly Premonition, where Fallout New Vegas, I completed the main story, And was so unimpressed that I then went and played Deadly Premonition as a palette cleanser, and found myself completely delighted. It's back in 360 days.
Which, that probably confounds people, because I know there are plenty of people that like New Vegas, and there are plenty of people that have looked at Deadly Premonition and go, oh, is that a PS2 game?
But, yeah, so... So I went, oh, so the game I went on and played is, like, it's been on my radar for a while. Like, when it was initially having trailers show for it, I was quite interested, but I didn't have the nerve to buy it on launch in 2019.
Because games are expensive. Not sure if anybody's noticed.
And, like, the reviews at the time were really hit and miss, I found. But I finally played and completed the main story of, not all the side quests, but the main story of Death Stranding. Not on PC, obviously, but on the PlayStation 4. Hideo Kojima's mammoth of a game with pretty much every one of his, it feels like every, like a whole bunch of his best friends in it. and like...
Or do you want to be in my game? Yeah, okay.
From musicians to actors and TV hosts. And his favourite musicians as well, it feels. But basically, yeah, it is a game. It's had a lot of press lately because it got re-released, or it finally made its way onto PC in the summer of last year. So it got released on PS4 in November 2019, and it made its way to PC, I think, June last year. And when it went onto PC, I think a lot of people found that it was kind of like the perfect game for the pandemic, or the perfect game for 2020. I'm going to say that a lot of people are saying perfect game for 2020, but really the pandemic's still going, and I would say it's just the perfect game for the pandemic. Unlike The Last of Us Part 2, ironically. But Death Stranding basically sees you playing as...
Norman Reedus?
Norman Reedus, a.k.a. Sam Porter / Sam Porter Bridges. The story will explain why that's the thing in terms of his nomenclature, naming, whatever. World's going to shit a bit. There's not much of humanity left in the United States, which is the only landmass area kind of focused on. But it seems that civilization is tipping towards a point of extinction. Due to a big event that happened many years before the game, which is called the Death Stranding. And the game takes you through an intriguing, intriguing ideas around kind of like time, thought, death, and existence, and space, and basically, I mean, it's like, I first described it on Twitter as a cross between, what was it? It was a cross between The Postman, you know, that 90s film with Mr. I think it's Costner in that, post-apocalyptic postman, delivery guy, you know, going around the country.
Yeah.
That's what you do as Sam Porter Bridges in Death Stranding. Like, your main role in that game is to deliver stuff. It's pretty much the main thing you do in that game is you are the ultimate delivery person. So it was cross between The Postman, Akira, Neon Genesis Evangelion. I feel like there was something else, and I'm gonna find the word I used, which means I have to now search my own tweets.
Oh, that's dangerous. That is dangerous.
So I need to do, if I search Neon Genesis, because I don't say that very often. Okay. Yeah, so Death Stranding for me was like, okay, Final Fantasy The Spirits Within crossed with Neon Genesis Evangelion, The Postman, and Akira. Basically.
That's a weird combination, but seeing you've played the game for hours and hours and hours on end, I can see it.
Yeah, and the thing is that I got partway from like probably about 10 hours into the game, and I was like, how long do people say this game really is? And so I did do a quick search around online for that. And it was estimated to be between 50 and 80 or so hours.
How much of that is the ending?
Well, as we found out one Saturday after New Year's, it was maybe 2-3 hours was the ending.
Bear in mind that the ending, by the ending, I mean the point from the, you know, the last boss that you take on to when, you know, the credits roll and any content after that, where basically the game stops in its tracks.
The narrative stops and basically a game plus mode is revealed, essentially, or a continuation game where you don't deal with the main story, you can just deal with the side stuff that you have done.
That was legit, like, a couple of hours.
Yeah. It was fine. As well as Norman Reedus, the game also has a one Mads Mikkelsen. Was my curiosity about the character played by Mads Mikkelsen a reason why I wanted to play the game? Sources say yes!
Everyone who has ever talked to you about Mads Mikkelsen?
In the last sort of 6-8 months, yeah. To be fair, I do like Norman Reedus. Like, I love Daryl in The Walking Dead. I know he's been in other things other than The Walking Dead, but those shows...
That's the thing that he's been most known for.
At least in the UK, like... Yeah. Was it Boondock Saints?
Yes.
It was never huge over here.
No, it's in America. I think it was at college campuses that there was, you know, big thing about it. But you know how something gets popular because of, you know, kind of college kids that have, you know, traded the film to each other.
But anyway, Death Stranding. So you are a delivery man. You are a porter. You run deliveries across the continental United States, or what's left of it. Is the thing, civilization. Like you've got hardly any cities left. There's no states anymore. You've got people living in isolationist situations as well, in kind of like survival, like bunkers and things, like preppers, basically. It is dystopian, post-apocalyptic, because it's kind of weird. It's like both apocalyptic. It's like the pre-production, production, and post-production of an apocalypse. It's like all stages of an apocalypse are happening at the same time. Which, considering the weirdness of the game, like actually that makes sense. There's like interesting like mechanics and stuff, like timefall. This like when it rains, there's like these particles in the rain that basically cause rapid aging, and it creates like a mechanical challenge throughout the game where you kind of you obviously, thankfully, your clothing as a character protects you from it. But all the stuff that you're portering about, you're carrying around, all the vehicles you use can all be affected by it. And so it becomes a race to A, keep either containers safe or like repaired enough to keep transporting something, or, you know, finding shelter whilst rain is going on and things.
Why don't they just have like another coat that you put over the stuff that you're transporting, and then it wouldn't affect it?
Well, because it literally affects any material, pretty much.
Apart from yours.
Not quite. I wouldn't call it, like, and also, like, it's a loose fabric, whereas some of the stuff kind of needs to be in hard cases. You can just baggily carry it around. Everything so that degrades. Like, it's an interesting online aspect to the game as well, where you basically hook up with, I think it's ranged by star sign, from what I can tell and what I've read online, but you basically have a degree of online play in the sense that other players can support each other by either building infrastructure, leaving vehicles, or making signs that warn of things or support things. You don't. That's the whole point. That's what I'm saying. You support each other in a like a weird way.
But you don't see like other players.
You see in sometimes like bits of them in the world, like if they've left a piece of a car somewhere for a while. Yeah. And it's nice. The post game where you could keep carrying on missions, you could obviously like go into the world and like repair stuff. So you can slowly build roads for a lot of the game, but those due to Titanfall will degrade in game time.
Right.
Unless you like go in there and repair things. There's whole mess that asks you for your birthday, the game does at the start, to assess your Dooms level. And Dooms is like another thing that doesn't really, I think, have much of a gameplay aspect aside from assigning you to who you play with online, as it were, but has like a major plot point for the characters in the game. Anyway, it's weird, it's cool. If you want a game that makes you feel like the pandemic situation and having constant lockdowns and having little human contact, okay, yes, it might be a depressing look on that, but I feel like it's an antidote to that at the same time, because it could be worse. It reminds you, it could be a lot worse. You could have a, theological, philosophical, physics conundrum on your hands as well.
Well, I mean, part of the theme of the game is reconnecting.
Yeah. And it being very difficult for people to do that as well. So aside from Death Stranding, also I should point out that I did buy Hades before Christmas and I am planning on playing it, but apparently I wanted to play super heavy games before that. But over Christmas, because last year I did read Red Dragon by Thomas Harris, which is the first Hannibal Lecter series novel, and then over the course of Christmas and last week I read The Silence of the Lambs, Hannibal, and Hannibal Rising, all of which I got given for Christmas by my parents, and I've decided that Thomas Harris needs to write two more novels, which is sad because he struggled to write Hannibal Rising because he was kind of had his arm twisted to write that one. He didn't really want to write that. And it sounds like basically if he didn't write one, somebody else who had IP rights was just going to like get somebody else to write it. And so he either had to write it or somebody else would do it. And he obviously didn't want that. But dear of him, he's like in his 80s and probably has other things he wants to do and did say in an interview that when it comes to his writing, it can take him like a day to write a paragraph. He's from the George R. Martin School of Writing. Which is why the novels are very well spread apart.
Are they like channeling their, inner Cornishness or doing it directly?
They could be. Maybe they have got secret Cornish backgrounds that we don't know about. It could be. Get round to it directly. It's all possible. Anyway, I felt like there's two novels missing. It feels like there needs to be a connecting novel between Hannibal Rising and Red Dragon. Basically, we still don't really have, in terms of the novels, a story that covers how Hannibal was caught originally.
Yeah.
Basically. Or even just how his career got started. Like, Hannibal Rising ends with him finally over when he's comes to America for the first time, basically. And that's kind of where it ends. Him carrying on the vendetta that he also started in Europe prior to that. And then, meanwhile, on the other end, we've got Silence of the Lambs. Mm. Not Silence of the Lambs, sorry, Hannibal. And that ends with... this novel was published in 1999. Can I talk about spoilers?
Yeah.
Spoilers for the novel of Hannibal.
22 years, yes. I think I can.
Hang on, does anyone die in it?
A lot of people die in Hannibal. Hannibal and Clarice Starling run off together. It first seems to start out with like a psychological kind of brainwashing type thing of Clarice. And eventually Hannibal doesn't really need to use the tools that he does to do that anymore. Clarice is just like with him. They're in a relationship, basically. But I do feel like, despite the fact that the Silence of the Lambs certainly, I don't know if Hannibal did, but certainly Silence of the Lambs did, they referenced, like, because Will Graham's pretty wrecked by the end of the events of Red Dragon.
Mm.
So, like, he got hurt. I mean, he already got hurt by the events prior to the... He got hurt by Hannibal before Red Dragon. He gets hurt again via proxy by the end of Red Dragon. But because over the course of Hannibal, Jack Crawford basically reaches pretty much retirement age and he's really unwell. I can't remember now, sorry, if he dies of natural causes by the end of Hannibal. But if you were going to have somebody to then go hunting for Hannibal and Clarice, it would be Will Graham. Like, Will Graham would be brought so reluctantly out of retirement to go find them.
Yeah.
Or at least if they decided to set foot in North America again, in the United States, because by the end of Hannibal the novel, Clarice and Hannibal, I think they're in like, I think it might be Argentina or it might be Brazil. They are somewhere in South America, living a high life of opera. And yeah. It just feels like there's two novels missing, basically. But Dear Thomas Harris, he's in his 80s, and it takes him a while to write. So, and also he needs to feel compelled, like Hannibal Rising didn't do very well when it was published.
Well.
They did do a film adaptation of it, which I might watch. It's actually quite good. It's very different to the previous novels, but then it's about a young Hannibal Lecter who's still growing into himself. He's still having his becoming,
yeah.
As Brian Fuller would emphasise if it was Hannibal, the TV series. So, yeah, so I read all the Hannibal novels. Did I do anything else? No, I started another book, a non-Hannibal book, since then. Do you know what? I did finally finish watching The Sopranos over my Christmas break. What did I think of the ending of Sopranos, which was controversial and still remains controversial? I think it works. I think it's an open ending. And people who think it means a certain thing has happened with Tony are wrong. I think that was not the intent.
They're wrong.
They were wrong.
They're just like, no.
Well, the thing is that, and as I saw in an online article, what I read up on, like, how unpopular was this ending, like, as one guy who worked for, I think it was like a New Jersey newspaper, who covered it with another guy when the show was running, like, pointed out, like, why do people need the particular ending, which is kind of like the negative ending? Do they, like...
When you say the negative ending...
Basically, you... Soprano would be... spoilers for a show that ended in 2006. I think it's 2006. Yeah, 2006. Or 2005. But basically, there's a suggestion... It's possible that Tony got shot at the end of the episode, but the series ends on a cut to black as we're waiting for, we assume, his daughter River to like come into this like Americana kind of like diner place that's like kind of like American graffiti kind of whatever in New Jersey. Yeah. It's just kind of like the way the scene is very different, like anything from much of the show. And it's possible that maybe somebody in the diner got up and shot him. But it's also entirely possible that the Sopranos just kept on ticking on and they had a family meal together. And it's like, you got a question, well, why do you have to have a situation where Tony dies? Like, is it because he's a criminal? Do you need that kind of moral justice thing in a show where it's morally grey?
Extremely.
For a lot of the time. So, like, because it's not cut and dry. Basically, to have him die, especially, actually. But yeah, I'm glad that I watched it. Like, it was interesting, you know, catching up, basically, event television that I didn't get the chance to watch when it was originally aired in the UK. So, yeah. I think that's everything I would care to speak of.
What about the stuff that you would care not to speak of?
That's just more Doctor Who, I think, at this point.
Ouch.
See, that could just be a long sigh.
Yeah. Oh, what was it we did? Oh, we did watch The King of Staten Island last week.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's right.
So bought that on Blu-ray for Paul for Christmas and got around to watching it last week. Do not believe the box that tries to say it's a comedy. It may have been a comedy if the deleted scenes had been included in the film, but the final cut of the film is very much not a comedy. It kind of straddles the line between basically... It's basically slice of life with comedic observations and dark humour, and there are elements of drama.
What's this again?
The King of Staten Island, you know, the...
Oh, yes, 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 yes. I remember you.
Judd Apatow behind it a bit, a couple of people. It's about 20-something whose life's kind of... It's not going anywhere. His dad died when he was a kid, like when he was 7. He was a firefighter, died, you know, dealing, trying to rescue people during a fire. And so his mum, who was a nurse, was left to raise him and his much younger sister by herself. And his sister, like, is, you know, about ready to head off to college and stuff when the film starts. And it's just like, yeah, it basically deals with how that one change kind of seems to spiral through a bit and lead to basically this protagonist, this poor guy. Is it Scott? Who is he called? I feel like he was called Scott. Anyway, it leads to the main guy of the film. His living situation's never particularly good. His mental health's never been particularly great. His psychological conditions, mainly being, I think it was ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
And like it's like like clinically bad for him. So it kind of deals with how, because of his condition and having a lack of like a full family growing up and that, and perhaps being without support.
Yeah, Scott.
That dear Scott kind of like, he's an intelligent guy, but with his ADHD and the lack of stability he needed kind of like growing up and that, his life's not really going anywhere and he's finding it hard to become an adult.
Yeah.
Really, he can support himself.
Yeah, partly because the way that everybody treats him has always been like as a kid or someone constantly needing to be
it's kind of like the way, like, people are aware of his condition, but it's perhaps an example of how relying too much on someone's diagnosis can create degrees of self-fulfilling prophecy and cause issues. It's a really thoughtful film, and it's definitely worth watching. We got the Blu-ray, but I'm pretty sure it's on like a whole load of streaming services to like rent or whatever at this point as well.
I mean, I think it's a relatively new film. I think it's like 2020.
Yeah, it was released 2020. Yeah. It's just that it had a digital release because of the cinema situation.
The planet situation.
The planet situation. The situation of situations.
Oh, that reminds me.
What?
Well, now we messed off.
What?
Tenet.
Oh, yeah, we watched Tenet finally. Again, got that on Blu-ray cheap. We actually managed to pick up on Blu-ray just before the latest lockdown.
Well, to be fair, it wasn't cheap.
It was cheap.
It was not cheap.
It was cheaper than going to the cinema.
Which, how the hell did that work out?
Technically
speaking. Yeah, tickets are £8.50 each now. If we did do a 2-for-1, yeah. So... still cheaper than a lot of places in this country.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
£8.50,
really?
Yeah, they've gone up to that now.
Christ.
At least when they were last open, they were.
That makes plenty of sense. Best appeal to people wanting to go in and worrying about all the, you know, the health stuff by putting the price
anyway,
up.
Before the England lockdown happened, the day before we picked this up and then we finally watched it.
Country's closed.
Tenet
more or less.
Is...
I really enjoyed it, and I don't understand why other people don't understand it. Because basically the premise is that...
They go into a lot of explaining it compared to previous films, I feel.
But basically there is a way to reverse time's arrow for objects and people by going into this device, and that device is in the future but has been basically sent back into the past using the device. And it's an interesting, thoughtful kind of look into basically how the technology would kind of change people.
And the events of history.
Now you see, that makes me more interested in it, because all the trailers, which, you know, I liked the you know, the Batman movies. So, you know, of his, and I liked Inception. So it's like, okay, yeah, I'll give this a go. But the, you know, the trailer is all, you know, tries too hard to go, ooh,
my main,
we're not going to tell you enough about it. And said, well, if you're not going to tell me enough about it, then I'm not going to bother.
My main criticism of it is that it has a slight height. It has a heist style to the way that the story is set up in some ways. So it does a lot of jumping. In terms of like time and moving about, so you don't have like transitionary scenes and stuff, or ends to scenes. So it kind of feels like, why are we suddenly here with these people? Quite often it did to me when I watched it. It was more a problem perhaps in the first half of the film, whilst everything was kind of being gathered together, like the planning stages of a heist, and the bit where you get all the stuff together. Nobody said "son of a bitch, I'm in," unfortunately. but it kind of like evens out like later in the film. But it is a bit kind of like we're all over the place, because we're literally not just over the place in like locales within a locale. It's global, so it kind of
So and it does a good job of warping your brain in the sense of things going forward and going backwards. As well, so I've kind of found that, like, obviously, kind of the special effects when the car is kind of meant to be moving backwards in relation to the world, you feel like that is the case. You know, that car does feel like it's going backwards. So, like, say for example, I don't want to spoil too much.
The effects work is good. For compare all this. I do wonder if thingy he create. Rick and Morty dude. Is it Dave Harmon?
Dan Harmon and Justin Roiland.
I do wonder if they've watched Tenet and are thinking of doing a heist too. I feel like if they do a heist, I feel like they'll do a second heist episode, and it will be a ripoff on the time level. That's what the heist episode was missing in season 4.
But time it travel. Is it is very warped, but in a really kind of cool way.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's actually even like a concept that's ever really been properly tackled before either.
Or at least it's a new way of considering the movement of time.
Yeah.
And traveling through it.
No, see, this just makes me more interested in watching it.
It's not a terrible film. It's an enjoyable film.
It's not a terrible film, Emily.
I would say if you have a 5.1 sound system, yes, it will get interesting. The issues that people had in the cinema can also be translated to a home cinema audio setup. You will probably find yourself increasing the volume a little bit, and you will know about the bass. You will know all about that bass, about that bass, about that bass.
That buttery biscuit bass.
But yeah, I mean, there are certain concepts within the story which do get kind of repeated and repurposed and whatnot. So as long as you're kind of pretty much like paying attention to what's happening, you should be all right.
Yeah.
With understanding what's going on.
I mean, bearing in mind that we have entertainment journalists and such who were complaining that they couldn't follow Witcher because it's, you know...
Yeah.
You know, it has, you know, jumps around in time, and it's just Jesus Christ.
I think people have gotten a little bit spoiled with chronological storytelling. Just gonna put that there.
I've found that... People generally tend to kind of half watch films sometimes, and then they're like, oh, what's going on? Oh, I don't understand this. This must be crap. And it's just like, no, you just haven't been paying attention.
Yeah, don't look at your phone. Don't knit.
Well, in fact, there were people that were lost watching the fucking Matrix.
Oh, that's true.
And it's just like, no, just listen, watch the film, and you'll be fine. It's, you know, the Matrix, which is a, you know, artificial world.
You know, yeah. And everything is helpfully green tinted, so you can work out where the hell it is.
Okay, my dudes, I think this is
your dudes.
Yeah, my dudes. I think this is my guys. I think this is my buddies, my pals,
chums.
Compadres. Can I just say a bit of a shout out to my work colleagues? Because I've heard stories about them kind of listening to the past kind of couple of episodes or whatnot, basically coming out of it, basically being like, yeah, Emily was kind of really incensed last time by, digital concert tickets. It's like, that's really strong
opinions. I think it was about Druk being available, or another round being available in the United Kingdom. I still have strong opinions about that.
Okay.
Thought you might.
But yeah, like digital ticket sales for like an online streaming kind of.
Oh yeah, because the BFI had like a limited amount for a thing that is online.
And you apparently just like really
because it was
sweary and shouting.
The only legit way to watch that film in the UK for a small window of time last year.
It is, but I mean, multiple people have kind of commented about how it incensed and passionate
you got. You don't understand how much I like watching Mads Mikkelsen act on screen, even when he is speaking Danish. Keep in mind, I'm learning Danish at the moment.
I think especially when he's speaking Danish.
Yeah. Like, oh my god, mad!
So shout out to my work colleagues.
Yeah. Don't worry, I'll make the same complaints if it's a Hugh Dancy film that I can't legitimately watch. But he's been busy looking after the kids and acting in 24-hour plays during the pandemic. So,
have you struggled to get a ticket for that?
No, actually, it's been pretty easy when I've wanted to.
Okay, that's cool. That's good. That's good.
And thankfully, they've allowed the recordings to hang around for, like, after the event because they're, like, streaming it in US time at usually
the
around
Emily
2 in the morning.
Emily is satiated.
3
We're
in the
satisfied.
Morning. Or the Hugh Dancy front, yes. It's the Mads front, I've got issues. Plus, it doesn't bode well for his second film that came out at the end of last year, which was, I believe it's called Raiders of Justice or Riders of Justice. Maybe Riders of Justice. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe there's an issue between like the UK film distributors and the Danish film market. Maybe there's like some animosity there or something. They don't like each other and like making for effective distribution of, you know, Danish films in the UK.
Mm.
America's got it. It's not fair.
Are you saying they refuse to bring on the Danish?
Yes. Anyway, that is all we've got time for this week. So it's good night from...
It's good night from me, Paul Wood. I'm Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
It's good night from me, Paul Blewett. I'm on Twitter as @PaulBlewett.
And it's good night from me, Emily King. I'm on Twitter at EMKingMA. You can find notes for this episode over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk. We're on Twitter and Instagram at Nerds Podcast. You can find us on Facebook at Nerds Assemble Podcast. Episodes can be found on such services as Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and a couple other places. Also, if you saw our techie messages from the other week, that thing has now been dealt with, but that was just stage one. Oh, because we were doing stuff for the website.
Ah, right, okay.
There's still more to happen, so, but like stage one's kind of happened and it's fine. But yeah. So that's it. So good night.
Good night.
Good night. I have to say, it's tough to beat me.